taking it as a business risk that happens to be a cyber vector, you bring in a broader community of business people. We owe it to our business colleagues to make it a business-oriented decision, because I think those are where you get the most juice for the squeeze.
Greetings and salutations, one and all. Jeffrey Wheatman here with today's episode of Risk and Reels. I am your host and moderator, and today I am very excited to have my friend JC Dodson on. JC has a long, long history, not that he's old, because he's a very young man, but I met JC when he was the CSO for BAE Systems. He is now actually retired from that role, and we'll talk about what you did there, because I always think that's cool. Currently, JC is the founder and partner of the J. Carl Group, which is an invitation-only risk consulting practice. He's been sharing some really cool stuff he's been doing. Whether he can share it on the podcast, we will find out soon enough. And he is also a partner at the Cyber Activities Group, which is an investment firm. It is a pleasure, as always, to talk to you, my friend. How are things?
It is great to be with you finally. I've been looking forward to this for a long time, as you and I have talked. So it's great to have a connection now and finally be able to chat about a couple things and just have some fun together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, all right. So as everyone knows, we always start with a movie question. Let me think about a movie. Okay, I got one. So what movie comes to mind where the main character or characters are confronted with something different and new that they have never done or seen before?
I would have to say, as you and I have talked, you know that I'm a bit of a horseman from back in the day, and I live on a farm up in Northern Virginia. There is a film in 2016 that came out that really struck me as interesting, and it's called Unbranded. It was a documentary, and what it really was, it was a group of recent college graduates who were all friends, had a real passion for the Wild Mustang. And in order to raise funds for the Wild Mustang, they came up with an idea to go back and basically take some Mustangs on a 3,000-mile journey from essentially Mexico to Canada, primarily through the American West. It's a fascinating story. It had not been done before. Just the logistics in itself was something that was amazing. But I think the real story about man and animal and the uncertainty for those things and having just to react to that entire journey, but which basically took about 5 months, I think that has a lot of lessons in there. Certainly for me, I reflect on that a bit, on these quiet moments and just think about what their turmoil was and how it applies to what I'm doing. So, you know, as an older military guy, I can say, yeah, Patton got me in the heart, right? But I think Unbranded's one that's pretty interesting.
All right. Awesome. So I love that. I think you may be the first guest ever who came up with a documentary as your choice. So you win the award. I love that. I think there are some great documentaries out there, and I don't think we pay enough attention to them because I don't think they get the same advertising that the blockbusters or even the indie films. So great choice. So mine's going to be a little bit different, and this is, I think, more of a recency thing. So I actually just watched the reboot of the Star Trek franchise, and I know it was a little polarizing. It was definitely not the original Star Trek, but I happen to like Chris Pine. But what was very interesting there was talking about the Dr. McCoy character, who, when you first meet him, he gets on the shuttle and he's going off to space, and he talks about the fact that he's afraid to go to space. So the whole thing, really, his whole character is built on the fact that he does not want to be where he is, and he kind of had no choice. So probably not as philosophical as Unbranded, but I'm a Trekkie at heart. All right. So I think that actually gives us a really good transition. So as the CSO and CISO for BAE Systems, so for those of you that do not know, BAE Systems is one of the largest military, government, aerospace contractors in the world. And one of the things that we have learned and that you and I have talked about a couple of times is that supply chain risk management has dramatically changed. It used to be very much about physical things, right? Moving physical things from point A to B and figuring out whether people can do that. Over the last couple of years, and I think it's greatly accelerated over the last year in particular, we have started to see this huge impact of cybersecurity on that. A couple of examples, right? DP Global They're a shipping control company, and they got hit with ransomware at the beginning of December, and 40% of the freight going in and out of Australia got shut down for the first week of December, right before Christmas, right? The port of Nagoya in Japan also shut down. And we've seen more and more of these physical impacts and business impacts as a result of cybersecurity. So maybe you can kind of talk, because you were at BAE for quite a while and with your military background. So maybe we can talk a little bit about how you saw that transition, how you, you know, sort of went from a CISO to the CSO, right? Because I think that's probably a big chunk of that.
Let me wind back a little bit. And it was almost a decade ago, I would say, that I got pulled into the supply chain and I was a chief information security officer commuting back and forth from Washington, D.C. to London to office. We were seeing, and we happened to have developed quite a good global intelligence group in our cyber. We were fighting forward and defending forward probably before it was cool. And what we were discovering is that the harder the targets got, the more they started to drift and look for other areas to not hit us and hit us indirectly. I kind of equate it to the basement theory, right? It's if you got a leaky basement and you're starting to get water in and you patch up the leaky basement, you're feeling pretty good, right? So you patched off that one hole. But the way hydraulics works, it goes to the least point of pressure. And pretty soon you got, if you didn't get all the holes, you got another leak somewhere in your basement. That's what we were starting to see in terms of attacks coming from our supply chain. So we had plenty going directly at us, and we saw those on a daily basis with the usual characters globally, both basically nation state for espionage, as well as commercial actors in terms of the criminal side. But where we saw the new innovation occurring, unfortunately, in our foreign actors and our U.S. actors that were criminally minded, they were going to suppliers, and they were looking for credential harvesting, and they were finding ways to get to our network through the subcontractor. So that was kind of phase one. Get identity of a contractor that's trusted on our network, steal their email, come into our network as a trusted name, drop a load. And fortunately, we blocked those off, but we saw the trend coming. That has migrated then over time to more direct attacks on suppliers that have corporate information from other suppliers. So rather than going to a hard target, like a big prime who spent a lot of money on it, they'll go to the small marine engineering firm that may not have the money. Maybe it's two or three dozen really bright and talented engineers that has the same blueprint that we're working with and has our logo on it. So they'll get into the small engineering firm. So we really saw this over the decade emerging then. So that drew on another issue of like, okay, now we have this new risk with supply chain. In the procurement side of the world, we'd always had it. Dun & Bradstreet, financials, reputational. Do they have foreign ownership? What's their balance sheet look like? Can they really do the orders? What's their history look like? Do they have quality that would work for us as a supplier? So we've been doing supply chain management, risk management a long time. But in came this new vector called the cyber threat. And I think it was difficult in many cases where I think I will take fault even from the community that we overcomplicated it. You know, somebody said cyber and all of a sudden they thought they had to have a PhD in digit flow and advanced cyber kinetics, right? No. And I think the most important thing that I certainly learned and my colleagues and those brighter than me was that we have to convert these cyber concerns to a business concern. How do I take this fairly complex attack sequence and what we're seeing and how do I bring it forward into bite-sized elements that the board can understand, that the C-suite can understand. And I think once we get to that point of taking it as a business risk that happens to be a cyber vector, you bring in a broader community of business people. We owe it to our business colleagues to make it a business-oriented decision, because I think those are where you get the most juice for the squeeze.
You hit on a lot of things there. A couple threads that I'd like to pull. I really like what you talked about, the fact that we make cyber so complicated. And part of that, I think, falls to us as security people because we want to be perceived as wizards, right? A number of years ago, I was involved in a research project. It was written as a result of a street collapse in New York City. And they wrote this note about, well, how do we respond to a street collapse? And I kind of pushed back and I said, what's the business problem? People can't get to the office. Doesn't matter why. Let's talk about what happens when people can't get to the office. And I think that's such an important concept. I love that you talked about the fact that supply chain for so long was very much about the physical part of it. I articulate it even more simply than you did, maybe to my detriment, which is that if legal was okay and finance was okay, you signed a contract. And that is just not the case anymore. Now, IT needs to be involved in resilience and continuity, and all those folks need to be pulled in there. And then the other thing you talked about, which I love, and I think it's really important, I do want to expand on this a little bit, is that the decision about how you react to risk, whether you offset, whether you insure, whether you offload, et cetera, is a business decision. And I think that's very much tied back to the new SEC regulation, which we've talked about on Risk and Reels a couple of times. All these CISOs are getting into these extensive conversations about what's material. And I don't think it's their decision to make. I think it's a decision that needs to be made by the same people who made materiality decisions on the rest of the business. So let's talk a little bit about some of the newer stuff that you're working on now. Any sort of examples where you found this cyber problem and you turned it into a business scenario and better decisions got made as a result?
Sure. I think one of the things that's occurred over the last, let's say, 36 to 48 months, right? 3 to 4 years. And like I said, I got foisted into the supply chain based on cyber threats almost a decade ago. And actually, I was the lone voice in the wilderness as we got a new problem. And it eventually has matured itself. And back at that time, the risk was only kind of visible on the cyber side through the CISO, right? Through my intelligence team, right? Through media and through other sources of people getting hit. Today, it's a whole new visibility. The visibility now about supply chain and linkages to suppliers and the amount of visibility that you can get from commercial means has really torn the excuse bandage off. You know, a lot of companies said, hey, you know, I don't have my visibility in the supply chain. I'm a third tier. I know who I contract with directly. But beyond that, I'm kind of, my head is in the sand. I don't worry about it. Those days are over. There are now commercial companies out there that give very high fidelity relationship models of what a supply chain looks like through open source intelligence. The expansion of very high quality open source intelligence for all kinds of decision making in business has changed the rules. And so the supply chain now, you really do not have an excuse for not knowing your supply chain, right? I mean, you can pay more or less for it, but you got to have some visibility there. So there's now an expectation, I think, by investors and by boards and so forth, that you should know your supply chain and who your strategic suppliers are and what their risks are. That turns into the next problem of, well, how do I measure risk, right? And is it accurate? And of course, that gets, you know, if you're talking cyber, that gets into different capabilities. I mean, we're with Black Kite. I mean, that talks to that capability. That's how that business, how this business, Black Kite, has grown into a desired product, is the need to inform about visibility and the cyber risks that are there.
I have a lot of conversations with industry analysts and industry experts and folks that sort of have a much wider lens than I do, at least. And there still seems to be a very big disconnect, both from the concept around digital supply chain versus physical supply chain, right? So yes, we may have to buy product and combine those product until we can sell product. That's traditional physical. But from a digital supply chain, right? I do business with a SaaS vendor who sits on a platform as a service, who sits on infrastructure as a service. Well, that's another aspect of supply chain. And Paul Padgett, our CEO, and we had a conversation the other day with a supply chain analyst, and he said that he's seen more cyber calls in the last 6 months than he did in the previous 3 years, but it's still not a lot. So how do you suggest or think that we can move the needle and get more of those conversations going? Because I feel like it's two different groups having two very different conversations, and occasionally they get together and go, ooh, that's a problem we probably should talk about.
With all due respect to the analyst, I would have a different view. Now mine is anecdotally, right? I mean, he has probably a large sample size. I am a by referral, so people call me. I don't hang a shingle out. They call me. And what I found in my last year doing this, in my supposed retirement, was that I'm getting asked to go in and advise companies and government organizations and governments on the least worst path, right? I mean, the easy problems have already gone down the drain. They're already past that in many places. And I'm very much akin on trying to get left the boom and having those folks look at these problems on the left side of the equation, because I see the disruption that it's occurring when I'm getting hired to give the least worst answer. In supply chain specifically, I think one of the most successful approaches that I have seen is that larger companies looking at name the number of suppliers you have. They get the visibility of who their suppliers are. They spend less time on a score per se, right? Because one can argue, is it an A? Is it 100? Is it epsilon? You know, pick a score. They all have value. But more important is the relative ranking across their supply chain. And I'll give you an example. If I have 10,000 suppliers, or say 100 suppliers, and I score them out, I'm going to have a distribution on whatever score is. As long as the score is the same, I'm going to have a distribution. I'm going to have some on the high side. I'm going to have some in my medium ranges. I'm going to have some on my bottom quartile or quintile or whatever you want to say, the ones on the bottom. My hypothesis that continues to be true, again, not thousands and thousands of data points, but over two decades working this stuff, is that when there's a problem indicated by cyber, in many instances, there's also the same supplier has issues in other dimensions of the supply chain. And I see the cyber risk as, in many cases, a leading indicator of other concerns. So what I am able to do and what I have been doing as a CISO background is using cyber, particularly external scanning capabilities, to flag, say, my bottom 10 or 15 suppliers. Now I have a working group to deal with, right? They're the bottom 15. Whatever my rating, they're the bottom 15. Now I can peel in and go back to my procurement folks and say, look, cyber-wise, these are in a pretty bad state. We have some all-stars over here on the right, but I also have some ugly ones on the left. What's the story with these 10? What do they do? Well, actually, these 10 are, two of them are very critical. They're sole source. Well, let's dig into that. How are they performing? Well, actually, they have problems with their delivery. They're financially unstable. And you use that the scores almost as a pointer to bring in a broader risk discussion and a broader due diligence on what that particular supplier may be to them. If it's a supplier that's, hey, this is a supplier, I got five of them, it's a dime a dozen. I said, well, if you got such a high risk here, why are you even using them, right? I mean, cut them off, use the other four, because your other four are higher, much higher from a cyber perspective. But I think, you know, using the data, not as a specific pointer of 70 is better than 65, but looking at it and trying to get down in the bite sizes and set your tolerance and say, okay, now I got to go due diligence. But in nearly every case, I'm finding that when we zero in on a handful of suppliers, one that are critical, we could spend a week, you and I, Jeffrey, on what's critical mean. I've given up trying to define that. I just hand it over to the program. The program has one view. The contracting officer has another view. The lawyers have another view. I just say, pick whatever definition you want. But if it fits in that bracket and you say it's quote unquote critical or quote unquote strategic, and it's in the bottom 10% of the score, by definition, that's something you should be looking at in greater detail beyond just cyber. And in almost every case, there are other issues with that company. And you start pulling the string on that and you go, well, it's a very small company. They don't have the technical expertise. They are barely able to make their orders. It's a new company. It's a new technology. They're still getting their legs under them. This is just one of the things that they put off. They're brilliant at what they do, but they suck at cyber, right? And I need to find a way to get better on them. I've seen that as a very productive way to go in. But then that changes over to the conversation with the upper tier. It's like, well, what do I do with them? Do I threaten them? Do I go help them? Do I reference them to a third party that might help them, but it's too expensive? But you have to be prepared when you understand that you have a risky supplier. You got to get that next step around the management team and say, what are we going to do with it? You know, then you can do some alternative thinking, right? What happens? What is the business interruption impact if that company goes down to a ransomware?
So I think you have a title for either a new book or a movie. You suck at cyber. I like that. We should probably talk about that.
It's part of my effort to make things less technical.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And I think most CISOs don't necessarily want to hear that. But there were a couple of things in there I think that were super interesting, which was about the criticality. And I think that's a really important thing to talk about, because I think you're right. I think what you use to define criticality isn't really as important as the fact that it's used and it's consistent, right? Because I think sometimes this stuff is not used consistently. And that's always a huge problem, right? I always tell people that arbitrary is okay as long as you're consistently arbitrary. You said something that I thought was really interesting that I'd never thought about before, but you said that cyber risk failings are frequently a leading indicator of failings in other areas in an organization. And I think that's really interesting, because I've always thought about it would be that cyber might be the last thing you do. But I think the point is really interesting, which is that if you look at their financials aren't stable, and you look at their on-time delivery and they're missing targets and they're not getting product out and they're, you know, losing people, I think that has a connection back to cyber. So I think that's a great, great example.
For the relative cost of examining a cyber scan you can get now for the money, right? As opposed to doing a legal due diligence every time you have a problem, the return is there, right? I mean, you can look at it and say, if I have cyber risk, then do I want to spend some more money about a stronger due diligence, right? And a lot of the due diligence you can do is just in your own QA. There's good value in that approach. And that's what I'd say about going left of the boom, right? If you're looking at those things early on, you're at least aware of what might bite you.
Part of what we as security people have a tendency to do is thinking we need to be 100% sure of our data, that we need to have a very high level of precision and perfect accuracy. But that's not really how you drive better decisions. And that's why I always talk, like I used to review risk registers and I would go, so you're going to two decimal places. I don't think you're doing anything different if it's a 4.35 versus a 4.39. And they went, well, no. Said, then why are you reporting at that level? And they don't have an answer.
Well, it's back to what you said earlier on, that we all have a tendency, you know, if I can make it more accurate or more technical, I'm inferring more competency. I mean, if you're being asked by your leadership team to render an opinion, they trust you. Don't sell past the sale. Don't go off on a bunch of tangents and in gizmos and formulas. Get to the big issues, get to the big solutions, get to the big problems. That's the conversation you want to have at the big table.
I'm a big fan of perfect is the enemy of good. And I used to work for an engagement manager earlier in my career. And he said, let's just get the thing round enough to roll, right? And here's the thing, CFOs, COOs, CEOs, they never have perfect information. They have experience and they kind of quote unquote go with their gut a little bit. And for whatever reason, we're not allowed to do that on the cyber side. And I think that's largely a function of the fact that we don't always do a great job of communicating back to one of the first things you said, which is in business context, is if we're not talking about business, nobody wants to hear from us.
And there's an opportunity to work with that a little bit. And when you come to solutions where you give a little bit of a solution fan, right? This is an 80-20. This is a 50-50. This is a 30-70, right? So sometimes it's very appropriate based on assumptions to say, there isn't one answer. Let me give you a spectrum based on assumptions and give you that most likely, likely, least likely. And that draws then into itself another discussion of, okay, now we have three elements. Where do we think is the most likely probability? So I think that's that important part again is, yes, it's cyber, but what is the business impact? And now what do we have to do about it? And I think that's the real value that we can add. And particularly with suppliers, where you have so many relationships, you've got to button it down into this workable size. You can monitor thousands, which is exactly right, because you want to know where the outliers are. But to me, it's all about looking at amounts of data, looking for those trends, going back down in those critical elements of suppliers, and then focusing in on those, what are the impacts that they may have on my company or my organization?
All right. So we are coming up on the end. So let me, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, JC. Tell me about the craziest attack you've ever seen in your career in cyber.
It would be back a few years where, and it's not a company I was associated with. Well, let me relate it to NotPetya, because I got called in with some other companies in NotPetya. I think that that is one of the most interesting attacks, not only because of the scope, but I think it was a harbinger of the future. And again, and I'm working with Ukraine on some things, and as many would know, that happened to be a Russian attack against Ukraine after they took Crimea, and it's a historical type of thing. But I think the spillover effect of NotPetya has a tremendous hangover in terms of what's going on now in the battles with Russia and Ukraine, and in the propensity or the possibility of very sophisticated things spilling overboard. And I think, you know, that inability to control the virus, say, is still something that is very scary to me. And that, you know, have we gotten smarter on that? I think we actually have. But I think the unintended consequences of that are very important. So I, you know, when I look back, one of the craziest things that happened, I think it was NotPetya with the National Health Service in England, Maersk. I mean, you can look at different companies that all had different impacts to it, but they were ultimately unintended. And I think that is another threat that we need to be aware of, that we're talking about targeted attacks. We're talking about, you know, that's what we focus on, the prey and spray method for phishing, all those indirect type of attacks. But I think it's these spillovers. And I relate that back to the supply chain. When we are looking at supply chains and we see certain types of tracks or cyber attacks, or we see certain trends in different regions of the world, I think we need to overlay that on these areas, whether it be certain sectors, whether it be certain configurations that are cloud-based, whether it be certain geographies, and overlay that filter with our supply chains. That was crazy. I tell you, it was crazy, because when I was asked to get into a couple other companies other than my employed company, we had relationships, and I was asked to go with some suppliers. It was crazy messy for the unpreparedness that many companies had to recover. And I think that was the big lesson out of that, that everybody who had a sophisticated recovery plan never checked it out. I do tapes every 24 hours. Great. When's the last time you replayed them and recovered? I do it once a year due to my business continuity plan. Well, dude, if you're doing it once a year and you're losing worth a year's worth of data, something's going on, right? I mean, so I think that was the biggest, most impactful thing for me was the attack itself, but it was more learning about how poorly a lot of pretty sophisticated organizations were on their recovery plans that were not being checked out and not actually being done. Well, we don't do that. I'd have to shut the factory down to do that. Let's practice pulling the plug when the factory is off for the vacation, right? Or it's down during the annual recalibration phase of the factory. Let's do a hard restart on a couple key pieces just to check it out.
That to me is very short term, right? Because you say, well, we can't shut down overnight. Well, but if you get hit with an attack, you're going to be shut down for 2 weeks. Which would you prefer?
It is the classic. I can't pay enough to prevent it, but I'll pay 10x to fix it. And in many cases, I talk about control for the companies. It's like, look, you want to be in your own destiny. You don't want to hire people like me when you're in a panic. You want to manage your crises internally. That saves you money. It lets you control the environment. You only want outsiders when you really need them. And there's a lot of things you can do. But I think we do have a little bit of a, if it happens, I'll call somebody who does this every day. Very true. But you don't want to have to call those folks. There's so many preventive things that companies can do for themselves.
Yep. No, that is, so that's a great closing point. So I took 3 pages of notes. Normally I don't take that many. So there are a couple of things here, and then I'll hand it back to you. So one thing that you hit on early on is as we as defenders tend to get better, the attackers are trying to find easy way in. And the metaphor you used, and I love this, and I posted something similar on LinkedIn a few months ago, which is that if you want to make sure your basement's sealed, you got to plug all the holes, not just the big one. Attackers are like water. They're always seeking the easiest way in. You also talked about sort of the shift about 10 years ago, for you guys at least, from moving away from the traditional corporate assessment like the D&B, the Standard & Poor's, those kinds of folks, to more cyber. And then, of course, I think it probably comes up on every single one of these episodes, which is we need to talk more about cyber in the business context. No excuse not to know what's going on in your supply chain. So that's that whole plausible deniability thing, which 10 years ago, if you didn't know about it, then it was okay. Plausible deniability is not a thing anymore. And then one really good thing that I love is sometimes it's about the least worst outcome. And that's so important because everybody wants good, but sometimes we don't get there. Sometimes it's about making it less bad. And then one last one was around cyber risk as a leading indicator for other bad business practices. That's a great example. And I love learning new things. And every time you and I talk, you always teach me something new. And that's one of my key takeaways today.
You and I have some great discussions, and it's just been a great opportunity to get to share it with others this time around. But like I said, this has been a blast. Hopefully there's some value to some folks. And
There definitely is. I learned something, and I'm sure our listeners will as well. So, all right, JC, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your busy day, especially with your global travel. So for the listeners out there, today's guest has been JC Dodson. Check him out on LinkedIn. He posts some pretty cool stuff. And if you need cyber and you need risk consulting, JC is and his team are great. So with that, I want to tell everyone to stay safe, stay healthy, stay secure. Make sure you subscribe below so you don't miss any future guests. Wheatman out.
Thank you for listening to Risk and Reels, a cybersecurity podcast. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to riveting 30-minute conversations about movies and cybersecurity. Jeffrey will be on the road this year at some of the industry's biggest events, but you can always find him on LinkedIn and Twitter at Jeffrey Wheatman. This podcast is powered by Black Kite, the only security rating service to deliver the highest quality intelligence to help organizations make better risk decisions.